Welcome to MMA on the Rocks. My name is Bill Welker. You are listening to episode 351 of the podcast. Today is Sunday, March 3rd, one day removed from UFC Vegas 87, headlined by heavyweight clash between Jairzinho Rozenstrike, Shamil Gaziev. More importantly, today is March 3rd. This marks the 127th anniversary of the Bottle and Bond Act being signed here in these great United States, which you guys may have heard me talk about before. The Bottle and Bond Act was a law put on the books to help regulate the bourbon industry. So if you ever see a bottle of bourbon and it says bottled in bond on it, that means legally, it has to follow certain regulations. It has to be aged a minimum of 4 years. It has to be bottled at 100 proof or 50% alcohol by volume. And it has to contain 51% corn, like all bourbon does. One of the reasons I really love bourbon is because it's one of the most regulated spirits that you can buy. You know, unlike whiskeys from other countries, they can put all kinds of additives and dyes and artificial sweeteners and all kinds of garbage like that. But if you have a bottled and bond bourbon, that's pretty much, I mean, it's legally got to be straight bourbon whiskey that's at least 4 years old, aged in new oak barrels. So to celebrate with you all, I have here some Bardstown Origin Series Bottled and Bond Bourbon Whiskey. This bottle is awesome. It's actually aged for 6 years, 68% corn, 20% wheat, 12% malted barley. So cheers. Happy Bottled and Bond Day to you all. Before we talk about some violence, let's have a little sip together. So hoist up whatever you're sipping on. And let's do this thing. Yeah, this stuff is excellent. It's kind of rich, very silky. Got a lot of vanilla up front, but chocolate on the aftertaste. Absolutely delicious. Don't pay over $50 for it, but if you find it sitting lonely on the shelf, it's got Bill Welker's recommendation on it, for whatever that's worth. All right, let's talk some violence, shall we? I don't even have all my notes pulled up that I wanted to have. I wanted to have the rankings and everything here. This card was interesting. It was pretty much a straight split between awesome knockouts and really like kind of snoozer fights, right? I mean, some of these were tough to get through. It was like, and it was almost like every other fight, you know, it was like, you know, there was a great knockout and then there was a fight, you know, you go get up and get yourself another beer or make some popcorn or whatever you do. I don't know what you guys do. I don't really need to. Mark says, that's okay, Bill. We're not here for professionalism. Thanks, Mark, I think. This is why I'll never be a full-time podcaster, I guess. Because I don't have notes prepared. I don't have the rankings pulled up. And I don't bring fighters on here to try and get them to talk shit. No, I guess that's what you need to do to make it in this industry. So I don't think I have what it takes. The main event was all right. It was just, you know, when we broke down this fight on Thursday, the picks and pours episodes that we do on Thursday evenings here around 9:30 Eastern Standard Time. What I had said was it kind of depends on what size Rozenstrike weighs in at, because when he first came in the UFC, he was a killer when he was weighing in around 242, somewhere in there, and then put on a bunch of weight and his performances kind of suffered. I think Gazeev won this first round. You know, he came out kind of aggressive. For two guys with as many knockouts as they have, though, the striking was not impressive. You know, even when Rozenstruik started to run away with it, you know, he was fighting behind his jab, which was great, but he was having a hard time finding the range on his cross. So he was landing the jab pretty much at will, but then couldn't really follow it up with anything. And I just felt like if he put like a third and fourth punch into the combinations, he might have had a little bit more success. Now, granted, I mean, he technically stopped the fight. I mean, Gazeev quit on the stool between the fourth and fifth round. But I just think it could have been, there could have been a little bit more from both guys in terms of output. It was like they were just kind of trading one and two punch combinations the whole time. And then Rozenstruik started to run away with it. I didn't really know what happened at the end of this fight. I couldn't tell if there was like a cut, but I think Gazeev just said like, no more, I'm good. So Mark Goddard stopped the fight. And let's see, Matt the Mechanic's in here. He says, in regards to the main event, you were totally right. The step up of competition for the Russian. Yeah. I mean, we hadn't seen Gazeev fight anybody close to the same ballpark as Rozenstruik. And then you're putting him in here with this guy who, you know, maybe they're close to experience in MMA fights, but if you add all the kickboxing experience of Rozenstruik, you know, he just had too much. He had too many ways to avoid the aggression of Gazeev. You're not going to show this guy anything he hasn't seen before. You know, he's seen every kind of punch and kick and knee and elbow there is. So that was that. I mean, this fight was okay. You know, it was nothing crazy. I don't know what we do with these guys now. Let's take a look at the heavyweight rankings. I don't know what we do with Rozenstruik. He was ranked 12 going into this, and he beat a guy who's not ranked. Man, let's do Rozenstruik and Derek Lewis. I'm like pausing, like waiting for somebody to answer me as if there's somebody else here. Rozenstruik and Derek Lewis, anybody? Going once, going twice? I'd like to see that. I mean, I feel like these are two guys who, you know, they both put on great performances when they're on. And they're both in similar stages of their career. So, yeah, let's book it. I just decided we'll book that fight. Mark agrees. Yep, that's the fight to make. Look, it's the first names I looked at on the list. And there we go. So let's do that. Somebody get in contact with Mick Maynard and let's just get that signed now, get it over with. For Derek Lewis's sake, let's not do it in Texas. All right. So anywhere but Texas. Co-main event. So, all right, Vitor Petrino and Tyson Pedro. Petrino just, too quick. Too quick, too explosive. Tyson Pedro was trying to catch his breath the whole time. And Matt the Mechanic was kind of spot on with this one on Thursday because he was saying how the switch to City Kickboxing, like, yeah, great gym, excellent coaches, world champion caliber fighters. But sometimes changing a camp and learning a whole new system can be at your detriment. Right? Because, you know, you're kind of starting from scratch and you're trying to learn a new language, right? It's like you spent all this time learning Spanish and then they throw you in Portugal after taking 6 weeks of Portuguese lessons. Like, yeah, you probably get by, but you're probably not going to be super efficient. You know, you're not going to be having any deep conversations with anybody, establishing meaningful relationships. You know, I lost myself on that analogy, so I'm sure it's lost on all of you as well. But the point being, I don't know, man. Tyson Pedro is just a guy that has so much talent. He's still only 32 years old. He got really emotional at the post-fight press conference, saying that he just can't do this anymore because, you know, going and training in New Zealand was such a big expense, and then losing the fight, he only gets half his money, and he's not able to support his family doing this. It sucked hearing him get so emotional about that, you know, because he's put so much into this, like pursuing his dreams, and just, you know, you come up a little bit short. He makes it to the highest level and just, you know, fall short just a little bit, and is worried that he's not going to be able to support his family. And that's a scary thing. You know, he's got kids and he's got a wife to worry about. So yeah, that was sad. On the other side of the coin, Vitor Petrino is going to be a problem in this light heavyweight division. You know, he had his foot on the gas, and you would think carrying all that muscle that he would fatigue, and not the case. I mean, this was one of his only decisions so far in the UFC, which also shows the toughness of Tyson Pedro. He took a lot of damage in this fight and kept hanging in there. So let's see what's next for Vitor Petrino. I think a fight like Ryan Spann would be really fun. Vitor Petrino, Ryan Spann, or maybe Alonzo Menifield. Two guys, you know, outside of the top 10, but, you know, top established competitors. Like, let's see where this guy is. So that's where I'm putting him. You know, I think he's up there based on what I saw. I'd say let's get him in the top 15. A Dominic Reyes fight might be interesting. Dominic Reyes, I feel like has a similar build and style to Tyson Pedro. So there's another possibility, but yeah, let's get him into the top 15, but outside of the top 10. That's my opinion anyway for Vitor Petrino, 26 years old, man. This guy, yeah, he's going to be a big problem. All right, Muhammad Makhachev, I think no surprise to anyone, gets it done over Alex Perez. It was, you know, I think not as dominant of a win as we were expecting. You know, I think a lot of people going into this were saying like, oh yeah, let's do Makhachev and Pantoja, you know, after he steamrolls Alex Perez. And, you know, I didn't get that. There wasn't a very dominant vibe at all. And after seeing that performance, I don't really have any desire to see him and Pantoja. The problem with this division is like the top guys have all fought each other. So we need it to be mixed up a little bit. Makhachev was ranked 8th going into this. Perez was ranked 7th. So I guess he'll bump up, but man, I think there's definitely room for somebody else to step in and make a statement and call out Pantoja and have a better claim for the title. I mean, shit, I think Steve Ursig makes a better argument after his performance, which I thought was probably the best performance of the night, and we'll get there. All right, Umar Nurmagomedov gets it done against Behzad Almakan for a fight that was 30-25 on two of the judges' scorecards. This fight wasn't as one-sided as it seemed. I mean, Almakan was never out of this fight. So first of all, you guys didn't see this. Almakan makes his UFC debut. He's like 13-1, 14-1, something like that. Makes his UFC debut against Umar Nurmagomedov, the boogeyman of the bantamweight division. Nobody wants to fight him. Comes out in the first round, drops him with a big right hand. Umar even said he was knocked out. He said he woke up on top of Almakan. So he gets basically flashed a flash knockout. Grabs a hold of Almakan's leg, holds on for dear life, and holds him down for the rest of the round. Then, after that, he realized, all right, my striking is good. It's not on this guy's level. In the second round, he was able to get Almakan down. Almakan was able to get back up, but it was all Nurmagomedov. You know, after that first big exchange, you know, he just kept taking Almakan down. And I love the way he was setting up his takedowns. I did a little breakdown video of this. I posted to Instagram and YouTube and TikTok. You know, I am on TikTok with all the young folks. So you guys can follow me on there if you're also on there. I don't know what the hell I'm doing, but I'm there. So in any case, I did a little technique breakdown. Let me know if this is content you guys would like to see going forward. I basically showed a little clip of the fight and explained what was going on. So for this particular fight, I used the high crotch setup that Nurmagomedov used. In the second round, what he did was land a stiff jab, and he used that to get Almakan to shift his weight onto his lead leg so he could shoot in for the high crotch. And then finish the takedown once he got in there, using a dump or a crackdown, as it's called in wrestling, where you basically just put shoulder pressure into the thigh, drag your opponent to the ground. In the third round, he used the same setup, but he feinted the jab, and that was enough to get Almakan to shift his weight so that he could change levels and get in on the high crotch and drag him to the ground. So I don't know if you guys enjoy that kind of content. Let me know. I'm still kind of trying to get my bearings with the social media stuff, and I'm all over the place. You know, I like doing the whiskey stuff. I like the cocktail videos. I like showing techniques that I've learned throughout my training in MMA. I like posting clips from the podcast. So make your voice known. Put some comments on those posts, and if you like them or if you don't, just say, "Hey, Bill, don't do anything like this again." Just let me know one way or the other, so I know where I stand. But Umar, I mean, what can he say? I can see why nobody wants to fight the guy. I mean, he seems like he could take anybody down at will. His striking is pretty good, but Almakan is on another level, and I'm actually excited to see Behzad Almakan fight again. More excited than I am seeing Nurmagomedov. We know what Umar's going to do to everybody at this point. Like, it's no secret. Like, even if he takes a big shot, he's just going to drag you to the ground and try to drown you. But Almakan, I mean, taking this fight on short notice, and it's his UFC debut, you know, he didn't take the proper amount of time to train for Nurmagomedov, and he was able to get up off the ground in the beginning of the second round. So maybe with a little bit more preparation, it would have been a more competitive fight. And we know he's got the power to knock people out. So I hope he doesn't lose any stock with the matchmakers, and they give him a favorable matchup going forward. Like, let's get this guy right into the top 15, as far as I'm concerned. Like, yeah, he lost 30-25 to Nurmagomedov, but who's not going to in this division, in all honesty? So Umar calls out Corey Sandhagen at the end of this. It makes sense. I think, you know, let's do it. There's no use in having Umar like fight his way up the rankings here. Like, let's just bypass all these guys, get him right in there with number three, Corey Sandhagen, and let's give him a fast pass towards the title, because that's just where it needs to be. I mean, I would be excited to see Mirab Dvalishvili against Umar. That's a really fun fight, in my opinion. And I would want to see that one next, but, you know, I think Mirab deserves a title shot. So let's see how it goes. Who knows what happens? Maybe O'Malley beats Chito Vera and then decides to move up to 145. Then let's just do Mirab and Umar for the Undisputed Championship, right? Fuck everybody else, I guess. All right, back to the flyweights. Steve Ersig over Matt Schnell. And this was, in my opinion, the best and most technical knockout of the night. So Ersig with a beautiful combination. So he throws a right cross to the body of Schnell, which takes his head off the center line. So he's able to avoid the jab that's coming at him. Then he's loaded up for a hook to the body. You could tell by his posture, he's looking for the hook to the body. But the way Schnell was postured, he had his right arm down. So his elbow was kind of protecting his liver where that hook to the body would typically be targeted. So in a split second, Ersig decides to change his target and brings the hook up top across the jaw of Matt Schnell. And it happened so fast. This was another breakdown I posted on Instagram and YouTube where I slowed it down and I freeze the picture where you can see Ersig loaded up for the hook to the body. And then when it speeds back up, you can see he uncorks that hook across the jaw of Matt Schnell, puts him out cold, walk-off KO. Now, there were some great knockouts on this card. For me, this one was the best because it was the timing. It was seeing the change and redirecting the target in the middle of the combination that really impressed me from Ersig here. And you guys would better understand if you see the visual that I posted along with my breakdown. So go over to MMA on the Rocks on Instagram or check out the YouTube short after you're done listening to this episode, or pause the episode and go watch it for all I care. Unless you're here live, stay with me on the live show. But if you're just listening on iTunes or whatever, you're sitting at your desk at work, just, you know, pull out your phone under your desk so your boss doesn't see and look at that YouTube short. All right. Eric Anders, unanimous decision over Jamie Pickett. This fight stunk. This one was a dud, man. Eric Anders, credit to him. He did what he had to do to win, but I mean, he spent the first two rounds just chasing the takedown. And then, you know, once he got Jamie Pickett to the ground, he was able to hold him down for the third round. But, oh man, don't ever make me watch that fight again. Another spectacular knockout, Vinicius Oliveira over Bernardo Sapai. This one, okay, here's why I love the Ersig knockout more, because this one came at the end of the fight. Bernardo Sapai was out of it. He turned his back on his opponent several times. This fight could have been stopped at several times during this third round. And, you know, nothing against Keith Peterson. I still think he's one of the best referees in the game. But, man, this fight did not need to continue when the guy is basically running away. And at the point of the knockout, he's basically, the cage is holding him up. He doesn't have his hands up. And Oliveira just runs in with a flying knee, puts him out cold. Incredible flying knee. This will be a highlight reel for as long as this kid fights, which will probably be a long time. He's probably going to have a fantastic career. but it didn't need to happen. We didn't need it to get to that point. We didn't need that flying knee and to see Sapai go completely limp on the canvas to know that he was done. He was done before that happened. I mean, the fact that he wasn't protecting himself, he kept backing up, he was full on turning his back on his opponent. Yeah, I think it was a little bit irresponsible to let this one go to the point that it got to. But all that being said, Oliveira's a beast, man. This kid, 28 years old, 20-3. He's explosive. He's hungry. That was his first win in the UFC. I mean, he has a win on the Contender Series, but yeah, let's fast track this kid. Let's maybe not top 15 opponent yet, but I'd say let's get him on the main card of a fight night, because this kid is much must see TV. Iman Zahabi, unanimous decision over Javid Basharat. Pass. Christian Leroy Duncan beat the brakes off of Claudio Ribeiro. Got him down to the ground and just ground and pounded the shit out of him pretty viciously. It was much more aggressive than we're used to seeing Christian Leroy Duncan in there, but great performance there. Another great knockout, Ludovic Klein, with a beautiful combination, knocking out AJ Cunningham, just mixing up the strikes to the head and to the body, ends up putting him down with a body shot towards the end of the first round, the very end of the first round. It was just a super clean combination. If you guys are watching or listening to this episode because you didn't catch the fights, that's a highlight to go back and watch for sure. Go watch the Steve Ersig knockout, watch the Oliveira knockout, and watch the Ludovic Klein knockout. I'll even throw in the Christian Leroy Duncan. And then Loic Radziabov had a nice knockout as well over Abdul Karim Al-Sawadi. So like I said, this card, it was a pretty even split. Like, it was either a crazy knockout or it was a dud of a fight. There was no middle ground. The only exception I would say would be the Nurmagomedov fight, just because I was engaged by that fight. I know a lot of people said it was boring, but for me, the fact that he got dropped so hard to the point where he admitted he was knocked out in the first round, the possibility of that happening again throughout the fight, if Almakhan got back to his feet, that kept me engaged. That kept me, like, not that I wanted to see Nurmagomedov get knocked out, but just that possibility kept me intrigued for that fight. So I would say that's probably the only fight that went to a decision that was actually interesting. Other than that, not a whole lot going on. All right. This Friday, March 8th, Cage Fury Fighting Championships going down right here in Tampa, Florida. I plan to be in attendance. If you plan to be in attendance, come find me. Say hello. Buy me a drink. Yeah, I will be there to take in the action. There's going to be some awesome fights on there. A lot of great local fighters. My buddy Matty Ice, Matt Allison, will be fighting on this card. He is must-see MMA. So if you don't live in the Tampa area, you got nothing to do on Friday night, check out the CFFC card. I believe it's on UFC Fight Pass. Yeah, Matt Allison, never in a boring fight. That dude is a fucking dog. And also, good friend of the show, friend of mine, the Southpaw Outlaw, Serena De Jesus, will be fighting on this card as well. So I'm super stoked that Serena will be in town. Longtime listeners of the show, you have to know who Serena is. she has provided some of the greatest clips that have ever come out of MMA on the Rocks. Her rant about women making weight on their periods is to this day one of my favorite moments in this 7+ years I've been doing this podcast. If you don't know what I'm talking about, you can go over to YouTube, MMA on the Rocks, check out the highlights playlist, and just look for Serena's face on there. But she's been a guest many times on this show. She's always hilarious, always provides great insight, and she happens to be a badass MMA fighter too. So another reason to throw on the UFC Fight Pass Friday night, Cage Fury Fighting Championships. I'll be there, and so should you. Then Saturday next week, we got UFC 299, and holy shit, is this card stacked. I mean, the fact that we get this back-to-back with, you know, UFC 300 next month, this card is incredible, and I'm sure we're going to go into more detail on Thursday when we do the picks. I think I owe Matt some shots. I think I lost some bets this weekend. I'm not even totally sure, but yeah, we're gonna take a deep dive on this one on Thursday. So make sure you're subscribed on YouTube, turn on your notifications, or on Facebook or on X. We go live on all three of those platforms. So subscribe there, turn on the notifications so you can catch the show live. The Picks and Pours episode is definitely the one you want to catch live, because we're very easily influenced by the comments. So come hang out, have a drink with us on a Thursday night, and you know, we'll talk some fights. So UFC 299, Sean O'Malley against Chito Vera in the main event. This is a rematch, and these guys do not like each other, which kind of makes it interesting. So it was 4 years ago that they fought. And if you remember, Sean O'Malley had some type of ankle injury in the first round. And on paper, it goes down as a TKO win for Marlon Vera. Since that time, Marlon Vera has been on a hell of a run. I mean, if you don't count the eye poke from Pedro Munhoz in the Pedro Munhoz fight, he has won 5 in a row. And his last win was over the former champ, Aljamain Sterling. Wait, no. All right. I just fucked up that whole thing, guys. I was looking at Sean O'Malley's record. So I don't know why I thought it was on Chito Vera. All right, so Chito Vera, since fighting Sean O'Malley, after that fight, lost to Jose Aldo, and then he lost that close decision to Corey Sandhagen. You know, that was a super close fight, and Sandhagen, another top guy in the division. Let's not forget that Chito Vera is cutting the line here at bantamweight. No, he's getting this title shot over some other people, Corey Sandhagen included, Merab included, Aljamain included, even though Aljamain's moving up to featherweight, it seems. But he's skipping the line because he has history with O'Malley. There's a good storyline here. He has a win over the champ. O'Malley, I feel like, is going to have an advantage here. You know that saying that when you win the championship, you get 30% better? For some reason, I feel like that's going to mean even more for Sean O'Malley. A guy like him, who has such an enormous ego, and that may sound insulting, but I don't mean it to be. I mean, he does. He's got a huge ego. The fact that he got that belt put around his waist and he won it in devastating fashion, I feel like, is really going to boost his confidence. Now, it could go one of two ways. could boost his confidence so much that he doesn't prepare as much, which I don't think is going to be the case. Or it can turn him into even more of a machine than he's been in his last few fights. I have a feeling that's what it's going to do for Sean O'Malley in Miami. However, I feel that Marlon Vera is the more skilled fighter. But that doesn't always mean anything. By the way, when I mixed up those records I was talking about, Mark Fellow says it's okay. That was just the Bardstown talking. Dude, I've had like three sips of this thing. But I appreciate you giving me the out. Yeah, it's definitely the whiskey. Co-main event, Dustin Poirier against Benoit Saint-Denis. I don't think Dustin Poirier could have an opponent who could pronounce his name any more elegantly than Benoit Saint-Denis. When he called him out, he's like, yeah, I want to fight Dustin Poirier. Like that French accent, it just hit in just the right way on Poirier. You know, we all say it so with such an Anglo accent. You know, nobody's given it that French accent that it deserves. I mean, he's Louisiana guy, probably speaks French. Like, it shouldn't be Poirier, right? It should be Poirier. But, I mean, I barely passed high school French, so don't look to me for French pronunciations. But this is a hell of a fight, man. I mean, Benoit Saint-Denis, I can't help but have a little bit of bad blood because he did my boy dirty, Matt the Steamroller Frivola, in his last fight. But man, this guy's dangerous. This guy is dangerous. But here he goes. You know, he fought a guy in Frivola who was in the top 15, you know, skirting into the top 15. Now he's jumping straight to the top of the heap with Dustin Poirier. So we're going to see if Benoit Saint-Denis is the real deal here, because Dustin Poirier has been in there with the who's who. I mean, what are you going to do? Are you going to hit him harder than Justin Gaethje's hit him? You know, are you going to grapple him harder than Khabib did? I mean, he's been there, done that. He's seen it all. Credit to Dustin Poirier for taking this fight too. I mean, Poirier, I know he's coming off a loss, but I mean, he's got so much name value, and he, you know, he could probably pick and choose his fights for the rest of his career if he really wanted to. This does not seem like a fight he had to take. So credit to him for this one, because that's a scary matchup for anybody. But if anybody can humble Benoit Saint-Denis, it's Dustin Poirier. So I'm really excited for that one. Michael Venom Page making his UFC debut. I feel like, don't get me wrong, I'm excited for this, but Michael Venom Page, 36 years old, man. And if you look at his record, like his best wins were against guys who were not like not UFC caliber fighters. I mean, the only guys on there who were UFC caliber fighters on his record are Paul Daly, and I would say Douglas Lima. Maybe Logan Storley. Logan Storley probably would have done well in the UFC. Now he's 36 years old. He got beat up by Mike Perry and bare knuckle. So I would have been more excited if he had crossed over a few years ago. But yeah, I'm still excited for this one. And the fact that he's in there with Kevin Holland, who you know, we know will put on a show. Although he shouldn't. He should get in there and wrestle the fuck out of Michael Venom Page. He shouldn't go in there. Shouldn't go in there and fight him the way he fought Wonder Boy. Because Michael Venom Page has a similar style, but he's in there to hurt you. He's not in there to be like a nice guy and like out karate fight you. You know, he's looking to break your face open and embarrass you and do a fucking Pokemon face dance over your dead body, you know? So don't let that happen, Kevin Holland. You're Travis Luter black belt. So use it. He's not going to listen to me, but I'm going to try and put that energy out there into the universe anyway. Let's see. Matt the Mechanic says MVP came 4 years too late. Should have jumped the Bellator ship before his last contract. Yep. And Mark Fellow says MVP is going to have as much UFC success as Ben Askren. For the UFC, this is a win-win, right? Because if they bring Michael Venom Page over and, you know, he gets some highlight reel knockouts, you know, they have, this guy's a character. They can build him up. And if he comes to the UFC and gets smashed, that's a win too, because they could say, look, Bellator has been touting this guy as one of their top fighters for years. And he came over to the UFC and he can't hang, which is why the UFC has the best fighters in the world. And they can continue making that case. And, you know, I know that's not necessarily true. There are fantastic fighters in ONE, in the PFL, in Bellator, in the mountains of Dagestan that we've never even seen before. But, you know, the winners write the history books. So, see how that shapes up. Gilbert Burns against Jack Della Maddalena. Another great fight. Let's see. Jack Della Maddalena coming off that close split decision win over Kevin Holland. Actually, split decision wins in his last two fights. Gilbert Burns is a dog, man. He's going to drag you into deep waters. Jack Della Maddalena has the much cleaner striking, I think, but Gilbert Burns might have more knockout power. And good luck if he gets you to the ground, because that man is an animal when it comes to grappling. Peter Yan and Yadong Song. That's a fun fight. Fun bantamweight fight. Curtis Blaydes and Jailton Almeida. Jailton Almeida is a friggin' spectacle. And this guy is coming off of a main event win over Derek Lewis. And this card is so stacked, he's going to be on the prelims against Curtis Blaydes. Wrap your head around that. Here's a guy who just fought Derek Lewis in November in the main event of a fight night. Now he's on the prelims of pay-per-view. That's how stacked this card is. Put that in your pipe and smoke it. Let's see. Mateusz Gamrot and Rafael Dos Anjos. Again, here we have a former champion in RDA on the prelims here. Pedro Munhoz and Kyler Phillips. I like that fight as well. Ivan Cutelaba and Felipe Lenz. Michel Pereira and Mikhail Olejanchik. Two guys named Michael that don't pronounce their name Michael going at it, who both have unusual striking styles. So Michel Pereira and Mikhail Olejanchik. So that's a fun fight. And then Joanne Wood and Marina Moroz in the opening fight of the card. So again, we'll take a deeper dive on this Thursday on Picks and Pours, 9:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And again, I will be at CFFC in Tampa at the fairgrounds this Friday. So I hope to see some of you there. And yeah, I think that's all I got, guys. So if you want to grab some MMA on the Rocks merchandise, ReaperOne.co is the website. As always, the links are in the show notes. If you want to get an over the top, under the influence t-shirt, tank top, or hoodie, MMA Rocks 10 is the promo code. Save yourself some cash. I think hoodie season is pretty much over, so go ahead and grab yourself a tank top. It's almost beach season, folks. It's like 86 degrees today here in the Tampa Bay area. So I don't think we're going to be selling a lot of sweatshirts anytime soon. In any case, happy Bottle and Bond Day. Hope you had a chance to pour yourself a 100 proof whiskey while you were listening to this podcast. And that's all I got. So until next time, cheers, everybody. Goodbye.